Coming up today on All Things Retirement, we're talking about a very difficult topic, and that's navigating finances after losing a spouse. It's a tough life event, but those financial implications can add even another layer of stress to the grieving process. So in this episode, we're going to dive deep into the most common financial issues faced by widows and widowers, from dealing with income gaps to navigating tax changes as a single filer. We're actually also going to explore some actionable strategies as well to address these problems, and talk about the importance of insurance and other products that are out there that can help you with planning for this day. So that's all coming up next here. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the All Things Retirement Podcast with certified financial planner, Anthony Alfo. Here's your host, Ben George.
Welcome into All Things Retirement. Glad to have you on the show today. I'm Ben George, along with Anthony Alfo, as always, over the Cardinal Wealth Group. Anthony, what's going on today?
Not much over here with kids. It's a little bit quieter. Kids are back to school, yeah, and get a little bit of midday break for my better half. And, you know, in the middle of fall at this point, so we got Halloween, I guess, in a couple more weeks, and we've settled on Sleeping Beauty for my oldest and Mulan, which never had saw that growing up.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how long that's been around for, but pretty cool costumes. And Halloween's a big deal in my town.
Is it?
Yeah, they basically shut down the town one day for a parade just in the town. And then they have a huge, you know, nighttime trick-or-treat set up. There's some history there around Halloween. I don't know if it's folk tales or what, but some of the movie Friday the 13th, if you recall, a lot of the streets are named after the streets in my town.
Cool.
One of the people affiliated with either grew up in this area. So Crystal Lake is where we're at. That's the lake that a lot of it takes place. So yeah, Halloween's kind of a big thing here. And so it's always a fun time.
That's really cool. And I guess I know Rosie's probably all into it now at this point. She's well aware. But what about the second baby?
Yeah, Rosie's into basically having two costumes, you know, the costume before the costume. And then, yeah, the little one's got a little bit of ways to do. She'll fall around. I mean, they're definitely into candy. So it seems like snack is their word that they use around the clock for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Snack. So, yeah, no, they're gonna do fine. We'll just have to monitor some of that intake as best we can.
Well, for me, it's gonna be Elsa this year. So, not that this can be any different from how my daughter dresses almost all the other days of the week. But
same. Yeah, we got Elsa. Yep, we got Elsa rolling in the house, and yeah.
That's great. Well, enjoy that. I know these are always fun times and easy to create some fun memories around these holidays too. So enjoy that. All right. Well, we appreciate you being a part of the podcast. If you haven't joined us before, thanks for being here. You can find everything we do online at cardinalwg.com. You can also call Anthony if you have any questions. It's a difficult topic we're getting into today. One that many of us don't want to think about, don't really care to plan for, but it is so important to do that. And we'll talk about why today. But if you want to call and follow up, you can always do that at 609-362-5512. Anyway, Anthony, this is not a topic that you like to lead with probably when you're doing planning with someone, but this is definitely something you have to cover, right?
Certainly not the most uplifting topic that we've covered here over the last few years, but it's definitely an important one. Unfortunately, it's a reality, and we have unfortunately have dealt with it with existing clients that, you know, came as a couple and have lost their significant other, and also we have started to work with clients that maybe didn't always make the financial decisions and are now in charge of that. And, you know, we're looking around and ended up working with us and came on board after an event like this. So never a fun topic, but, you know, if you think about it from a household of two coming to work with you, and, you know, we take a comprehensive approach and we're looking at their planning, you know, usually more specifics towards retirement and taxes and investments and all the what ifs and what could happen and stuff like that. But, you know, tax laws may change major and maybe not, and investment returns could stay moderate, maybe not. But the thing that we do know is that we all have an expiration date here, and it definitely is something that we, you know, spend some time on and looking at what is the survivorship financially, what's that plan look like from an alternative standpoint, and how that could affect the household for sure.
Well, let's start there then for those people that come in, maybe having already lost a spouse and, you know, find themselves having to kind of take over the finances for the first time. What are some of the main problems you see for people in this situation?
Yeah, and even if I could back up for a second on terms of when somebody comes in who's already lost somebody, but actually when we have both spouses there, I think it's really important from the beginning to understand what is their overall educational level or interest in this topic. So if you have, and it's still pretty common, I think maybe less so now than it was previously, but are both spouses involved with the financial decision making? It certainly was very popular in the past where just one kind of handled it all. But we want to really understand that, because if one is predominantly involved, we really try to encourage the other to get involved. And it might just be a little bit over time. And then that's just going to make this type of situation be a lot easier. A couple other things that we do advocate over time as we're working with folks is to make sure that if the other person is, say, less involved, that they have something where, call it a central hub to share this information. Things like passwords, sharing them on some type of maybe password sharing device, you know, not just written on some piece of paper. A shared financial folder, which has all the important documents, not just maybe what we might have here, but just could be old life insurance policies, estate documents, pensions that you haven't put into place yet. I mean, I have a client recently that her husband passed away about 15 years ago. She reached out to me 2 months ago and said she got something in the mail from Texas. Now they live in, or she lives in New Jersey, and said that there's some account that this company's claiming. She didn't know if it was a scam or not. But turns out that, you know, she had some money from when he worked at this company probably 30 years ago that finally tracked her down. So, you know, it's really important to make sure that you at least get your arms around those financial documents so that if the worst case does happen, you can be as prepared as possible.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm sure it's got to be difficult tracking all that stuff down. And really, you don't, most times you probably don't even know where to look, right? Like in this case, that's a perfect example is, there's could be things tucked away that if you're not involved, you just have no clue, which is also, you know, it should be on the person as well that's in control of the finances. And I know I'm at fault a little bit in this case too, that we should communicate and make sure these things are clearly laid out too, to make it easy on the spouse should something happen as well.
100%. I mean, you're thinking about 30, 40 years of stuff that you've maybe acquired over times and left companies, went with new companies, and maybe didn't consolidate some of these things. And it can happen easily, and maybe if you haven't done it, it feels daunting, but when you get it all in one place, it can really make life a lot easier, not even just for the remaining spouse, but also just going forward as with both spouses, for sure.
Well, let's talk about some of those problems then that people typically face. Like, what are the biggest issues for those that haven't really planned for this? Like, what are the biggest problem areas in the situation?
Certainly looking at the income sources would be one of the main starting points. So if we're looking at two folks getting ready to retire, and they're looking at things like their Social Security and pension decisions, we want to run those types of, assuming they haven't made those decisions yet, we want to not just look at the timing of when to say start Social Security or which pension option to take, not just from that one person or both of them living a long retirement, but also from the worst case scenario, what happens if one of you were to pass today and what type of effect would that have? So for example, Social Security, you go from perhaps having two Social Security incomes down to one. And in that scenario, maybe it might make more sense just when looking at retirement as a whole to start it today. But then when you start to look at the planning of, you know, if we were to delay the larger one out further, it would make your overall financial plan that much stronger by having a higher Social Security, because you're going to go from two down to one. That difference of that paycheck won't be quite as bad. We'll run a similar type of scenario when it comes to a pension, looking at the single life option versus some of the different joint and survivorship decisions there. Now, it might not always lead you to say, you know, we're going to just look at choosing the max income or the delayed option just from a survivorship standpoint, because there could be other things in place like life insurance to deal with something like that. But we really want to at least bring it into the conversation before we make a decision there. Another thing that's important to kind of think through is taxes. So you go from being a married filing jointly, there's a little bit larger tax brackets for certain incomes. We want to kind of see what happens if, from a financial standpoint, with one person passing, how does that affect you going from married filing jointly to a single taxpayer? A lot of times you could increase your tax rate, which could then affect your take home. Somebody in that specific type of situation could be somebody with larger required minimum distributions. Those required minimum distributions won't change. You'll have the same amount, but they could be reduced your take home because now you went from the 12% tax bracket up to the 22% tax bracket. So those are some of the, I would say, main ones that we want to really look at and kind of see how we can offset or plan around it. It could be, like I said, about changing the way that we start a Social Security or different pension strategy. It could also be about, you know, thinking about doing Roth conversions to try to get some of that money converted over to Roth so you don't have to deal as much with taxes from an RMD standpoint, to take a little bit of that risk away.
Yeah. One of the income gap is a big issue and can be maybe the thing that scares people the most in this situation, right? Trying to figure out where the money's going to come from, how much they have. But I know planning is a big part of getting ahead of this, right? Like everything else, you can get a plan in place for this. So what are some of the things that you do then to help solve this problem and get ahead of it?
You know, another thing it's hard to know what anybody's life expectancy is, but certainly it's worth a conversation to really understand, is there a history there from a longevity standpoint? Are both spouses healthy? Is there a history there of some, you know, having a heart attack or cancer, or, you know, something that could potentially put a dent on life expectancy? That maybe there is no real answer there. There's nothing there, but we certainly want to know if there's any health challenges. Another thing that we'll look at is kind of not just looking at if something were to happen today, but maybe something in late 70s, early 80s, if one spouse were to pass with, say, even a long-term care event that could further take some money, if they don't have a long-term care policy, take some money from their nest egg, use up some of that money, and then they go into a situation where they have one Social Security or maybe a pension goes away if they had already not taking a survivorship option. So we definitely want to look at that and see, okay, well, maybe we should get a long-term care plan in place just in case for an event like this. Ultimately, what we're really trying to do beyond, you know, securing their retirement is really think about this from, how do we give you the most cumulative lifetime income for both people, to kind of secure it for both people, in especially in a case if there's only one left over? And that really, I think, should come to the decision-making process, to the forefront of the decision-making process, to how do we make this strong for both parties, whether only one is here or both of you live a long retirement. So those are kind of the processes that we'll look at, and then we'll kind of say, okay, what gaps, if there are any, maybe they've already made some of these decisions and we can't go back and change, you know, is there a need for life insurance? If there's I mean, a lot of times we get to retirement, nobody wants another bill or wants to get rid of life insurance because they don't need it anymore. But when you look at some of these survivorship studies that we do, sometimes there is a need to continue to carry life insurance through retirement to protect against an event like this. Another thing that's pretty common these days is that people have maybe remarried or haven't remarried but have a significant other that they are essentially coexisting together. That can have a lot of effects on what pension option that you might take, because if you're not married, then you might say, because you're, if you're not married, you might not be able to choose them as a survivorship option. We might say, well, then maybe it makes sense to look at taking this pension as a lump sum and look at an annuity where you can name them as a survivor beneficiary, as an example. We've actually even had people over time that even decided to get married. I mean, they've already been together. They love one another. They've been together for, you know, 10, 15 years. They just never tied the knot. But when they looked at it and say, well, you know, if this person were to pass, there is no Social Security benefit for you. If you were to marry, you would get that. Same thing with the pension. So we're looking at a lot of, I mean, everybody's situation's unique. And so we're trying to at least bring it. I wouldn't say just get married to just purely for financial reasons. Obviously, the heart and the love has to be there too. But we have brought that to people's attention, and it actually have a couple of folks that have decided to get married just to make their planning a little bit stronger.
Well, there's a lot of planning that goes into this. Obviously, it's not a simple process, and it obviously depends on, you know, your situation, how, what strategies will work best for you. So again, the best place to start is by calling Anthony. You can do so at 609-362-5512, or start your Cardinal Success Journey. Get that free assessment online as well. Beyond that, let's say, okay, the spouse is taken care of and you're ready to kind of focus on some of the other family members, kids, grandkids. What mistakes do you see on that front typically?
Well, I would say that having, especially with a lot of folks being married, getting remarried, having a significant others, contingent beneficiary planning, making sure those estate documents are really up to date. Things change over a lifetime. You know, new families kind of come together, and you know, things will ultimately change where you might had somebody as a beneficiary, and it needs to be updated. Those beneficiary designations on your IRAs and life insurance supersede what's on the estate documents. And a lot of times people kind of forget about doing that. With regards to kids and grandchildren, looking at spend down strategies, what assets do you want to have left over for them? What are the most tax efficient to pass on? So, you know, first we're going to like take their temperature to really see if it's something that they're concerned with. Some folks don't really care what's left to them. They have the mindset of, well, you know, I wasn't given anything and they should get something. And so whatever they get, they should be happy with. And that's perfectly fine. And other folks, it's more of a goal, and or it becomes a goal over time once you start seeing grandchildren and stuff like that. So just really understanding what their wishes are. And if it comes down to, you know, leaving kids the most tax efficient stuff, you know, we're going to kind of look at it from, you know, what buckets should we be spending down from? Should we be doing Roth conversions to help with some of that tax bill? And just really, again, leaving a paper trail of documents now, because now you're going to go a generation further if when both spouses are gone or the one remaining, it passes. We want to make sure that it's also easy for them and kind of having that same type of financial hub that starts to bring them into the fold, especially as they age, is going to be something that you're going to want to maybe think to do. And everybody's timing is a little bit different when that's appropriate, but it's something that we'll at least bring to the forefront and have on our kind of our financial roadmap as something that, you know, they might want to do at some future point.
All right, very good. Well, let's finish off then talking a little bit about trust, because I know that comes up quite a bit for people that are planning for their family and trying to figure out the best way to kind of position themselves. So there's a lot of thoughts on a trust, right? There's a lot of feelings about whether or not you should have one. Where do you stand typically on a trust?
Well, I think it goes back to purpose, really would lead us to whether or not that's something that makes sense. There's different types of trusts, whether it's for tax planning purposes or just having a little bit of control from the grave, as is often said in this industry. And that could just be, you know, from protecting the money from creditors and divorce from your children or even your current spouse, to make sure that it doesn't kind of leave the family bloodlines and has every intention of staying within that family. And so that's one of the most popular reasons that we see today. I mean, with the current estate federal tax laws of, you know, $11 million for each spouse, a lot of folks are going to be under that. So a trust may not necessarily be needed in those cases. But from a control standpoint, to protect it against a creditor, it's a pretty litigious world today. And having assets put in that trust adds a layer of protection, along with if the spouse gets remarried, so the kids or grandchildren don't get disinherited, putting the money into the trust can protect against that. Also, if there's just help there from a financial decision-making process. So just going back to what we talked about earlier, one spouse maybe not as on top of some of these big financial matters. You want to have a trustee that they can work with to, you know, make sure that they maybe don't deplete the money or are making good financial decisions so they don't have to go at it alone. The same thing can be done for children. There's going to be some children that are ready to inherit a large sum of money, whereas others might benefit from having a trust there to work with a trustee that can help guide them on financial decisions so that they don't end up, you know, blowing the money in a few years.
Right. Well, a lot to think through. Again, the best time to get started on this is now, if you haven't put a plan in place for, you know, having to go through this life event, because it's already difficult enough as it is. You want to make sure you have some of these sorted out and you don't have to worry about the stress of trying to make these financial decisions after the fact. So again, begin by logging on cardinalwg.com. If you haven't, take that free assessment done, Cardinal Success Journey. It'll kind of help you answer some questions early on, kind of begin that process. But again, the phone number as well is 609-362-5512. Anthony, I want to get into a quick question before we get out of here today that came in from Jack to close us out. He asks, my pension doesn't provide an inflation raise each year, so I'll still be getting the same amount at age 85 that I'll have at 65. Should I even bother taking the spousal continuation option for my wife to keep getting the monthly payment if she outlives me?
Yeah, so this question kind of fits pretty good with today's topic. Certainly a common one. Most pensions don't provide an inflation adjustment on there. But with that said, you know, generally it probably makes better financial sense to think about protecting both lives over time versus just one. That's certainly something that you would want to test through a financial analysis to kind of look at those two scenarios and the impact there. And then, you know, with regards to just that inflation not being on the pension, if you think about it though, hopefully you have some type of nest egg that's going to be providing some supplemental income. And you know, what your Social Security and pension are providing, you might need have what's called an income gap, which is essentially the remaining amount of money needed to meet your spending needs. That gap may get a little bit bigger over time with inflation because your pension is staying flat. You just kind of have to look at it from a portfolio distribution standpoint and see, you know, are those assumed increases built into the plan? Does it fit within your budget? And then, you know, how should the investments be allocated in a way that kind of plans for that in the future? Obviously, you're getting Social Security inflation adjustments, which is, you know, one helpful thing there. And there's no reason why you can't build a portfolio that's going to help keep pace with inflation. So if it's just one income source, it's going to stay flat. Having a pension is certainly better than nothing. And really looking at it from a lifetime income, you just want to, you know, make sure if you're not going to go with that continuation, spousal continuation option, that you have a plan there, like maybe life insurance instead.
All right, great question. Thanks for sending that in to us, Jack. And yeah, Anthony did tie in perfectly to what we talked about today. But again, this is not an easy subject to discuss, one that is not fun to kind of go through probably from a planning perspective, but can really ease your mind and give you a lot of comfort later on if you have to deal with the situation. So again, get started by logging on cardinalwg.com or by calling 609-362-5512 for the Cardinal Wealth Group. Anthony, appreciate it. Good luck with the Halloween this year, and looking forward to some pictures maybe of the kiddos.
That'd be great. Thanks, Ben.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute tax, investment, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action.